Okay, translation. On slide number 4. As the friction of bamboos, destruction takes place. So also, at sunset, by the interaction of the faults of intoxication, all their minds become unbalanced and destruction took place. Okay. Let's go to the next slide then, which is number 5. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When there is need of fire in the forest, by the will of the Supreme, it takes place due to friction among the bamboos. Similarly, the descendants of Yadu were all destroyed by the will of the Lord, by the process of self-destruction. That's kind of interesting right away, is just that, how much does God involve himself with the actions of the external energy, and in what ways? And, of course, the verse we hear all the time is, Parasa Shakti Abhividaiva Shuyate Svabhavika Jnana Balakriyacha, that everything happens in that natural sequence of Krishna's activities. So he just gives a little kind of nudge to it and doesn't even have to deal with it. Prabhupada says one time, Krishna's having all these demons stock up all these nuclear weapons. So I guess the American demons, the Russian demons, Arabic demons, the Japanese demons, Chinese demons. I guess the only people who aren't demons are to that category would be South America or Africa or something, you know. So anyway, they have all these demons are stocking up these weapons. And Krishna is telling them, yes, you should have many nuclear weapons. It is very good. It is very good. So that intelligence they have, and then they'll use them to destroy each other, like that and so on. So that's the first point I guess Prabhupada's making here, that, Krishna is involved in this, but he's just kind of just giving a little nudge. And then there's friction. Natural friction is already there. The environment's already there. In the bamboo forest, it's very natural for the bamboos to be rubbing and that kind of be all kinds of dried leaves. So material nature already has this impetus, for creating problems just by itself. So Krishna puts it in motion a little bit. And some of the descendants of Yadu were all destroyed by the will of the Lord, by the process of self-destruction. Then Prabhupada goes on, just as there is no possibility of a fire's occurring deep in the forest due to human effort, so also there was no power in the universe which could vanquish the descendants of Yadu, who were protected by the Lord. So I did a little research on this, of course, and different places is describing this in the 10th canto. I think I actually extracted it here for the PowerPoint show, and reading of course before at the end of the last chapter, Prabhupada is describing other places too that the Yadus were all Krishna's, different demigods and empowered in so many ways. So there was the fact that there was actually no power on earth that could actually have vanquished them. So the only way for it to happen was internally. The Lord wanted them to be so destroyed, unless they obeyed his order, as indicated by the words, Tad Anu Jnata. So again, that picture we're talking about, it looks like people actually are angry and Krishna and Balaram are angry. But I think it's more like, they're having good fun because again there was nobody around to fight with, and so when they had a good chance to kind of pretend they were fighting with each other, they could really have a good time like that. And it says that they knew that Krishna wanted this to happen, so externally it's happening, we're becoming angry, but internally we know it's all just a good fight like that and stuff, for to make this disappearance possible and to go back to the higher planetary systems. Okay, next slide. Okay, number 6. Then if we do look in the 11th canto, because in the 9th canto we find, it's going through the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, cantos 3 through 7. Then canto 8 is the other 13 Manus and their descendants and all the incarnations. Then canto 9 is our Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. And during that, Krishna and Balaram appear. So that expands out as the entire 10th canto. Then 11th canto then goes into the, you know, the disappearance of Krishna and Balaram and the other descendants in Bhagavad Svatamana's reign after they disappear. So here we are in 11th canto, chapter 6, which is going to be the disappearance of Krishna. So, 11.6.28, Sri Bhagavan Vivacha, because Brahma has been asking Krishna now to leave the planet and to go back to his own abode to be happy and peaceful and not have to deal with the material world anymore. We can handle it. We can handle it. So Krishna says in response, Avadaritam etan me yad atha vibhudeshvara kritam va karyam akilam bhumer baro vatarita. The Supreme Lord said, O Lord of the demigods, Brahma, I understand your prayers and requests. Having removed the burden of the earth, I have executed everything that was required on your behalf. In text 29, Tadidam yadava kulam viryam shaurya shriyodatam lokang jigrikshad rudam me valayeva maharnava. That very Yadava dynasty in which I appear became greatly magnified in opulence, especially in their physical strength and courage, to the extent that they threatened to devour the whole world. Therefore, I have stopped them, just as the shore holds back the great ocean. So it seems he was talking to Uddhava after the disappearance of the Yadava dynasty, talking to Brahma after the disappearance of the Yadava dynasty. Slide number 7. And the purport continues. Yeah. The heroes of the Yadu dynasty were so powerful that even the demigods could not check them. The enthusiasm of the Yadus was unlimitedly increased by their victories in dangerous battles, and they could not be killed. Due to their martial spirit, they naturally desired to establish their power over the whole world. Therefore, the Lord checked them and withdrew them from the earth. Yadya asamhritya driptanam yadunam vipulam kulam gantashmi anena loko yam udvelena vinan kshati. If I were to leave this world without withdrawing the overly proud members of the Yadu dynasty, the whole world would be destroyed by the deluge of their unlimited expansion. So right away here comes this question, because it says they were overly proud. But back in the last chapter, the purport Prabhupada says that they were all personal associates of Krishna. They were, you know, very, very great personalities, and they could not possibly have offended any saintly people or things like that. You know? And saintly people could not have taken any offense at their activities and their play like that. But I remember reading someplace else, I couldn't find it in my time available here, that Bhakti Siddhanta had said that some of the members of the Yadu dynasty were already starting to do things that Krishna did not approve of. You know, so maybe this playing with the sages like this and that was a little bit off color, you know, wasn't so unexpected for Kshatriyas, which says their natural spirit is to conquer and to joke and, you know, to get intoxicated and laugh and those kind of things like that and so on. You know? But Krishna saw it was already starting to get a little off color. And so he said, okay, let me take advantage of this right away before things get out of hand, you know, get them out of here. So the purport probably says, just as a tidal wave overwhelms the boundary of the shore and wreaks havoc on innocent people, Similarly, there was imminent danger that the powerful Yadu dynasty might expand beyond all boundaries of social and political control. Okay, next slide, number 8. The members of the Yadu dynasty had become proud because of their apparent familial relationship with the personality of Godhead. Although they were very religious and devoted to the Brahminical culture, they had become, as indicated by the words Diptanam, affected by pride due to their relationship with Krishna. Okay, so probably the Maharaj and Bhagavad Puranan are taking this strictly from Vishwanath Chakravarti's comment, or also other commentaries like that. You know? So it says, and also to the Acharyas too, sometimes Baladeva Vibhushan, I'm sorry, Sridhar Swami's commentary says one thing, and then Vishwanath Chakravarti says something else, and Jiva Goswami says a third. And then Prabhupada has to then adjust everybody like that. But here it's saying that they have become affected by pride. Okay. So again, Maharaj Pariksit had become affected by some pride, thinking that he was everybody's protector. And so Krishna said, it's natural, this is the situation. You know, Dhruva Maharaj lost control of his anger and killing all the yakshas. You know? So, you know, how much they lost control, to what extent it touched their heart and everything else is a question. But anyway, you know, as it says here, they are affected by pride due to their relationship with Krishna. Furthermore, due to their intense love for Krishna, they will certainly feel such intense separation after the Lord's departure to the spiritual world that they would become maddened and thus become an unbearable burden on the earth. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out, however, that the earth herself, due to the attachment for Krishna, would never consider Krishna's own family members to be anything but a welcome burden. Still, Krishna wanted to remove this burden. There's very many, many, many subtle things in these pastimes. So as mentioned, the third canto already starts to become so sophisticated. Because yes, they might just go crazy and this might do all kinds of strange things out of madness and separation. At the same time, too, then the earth wouldn't take any offense at this, although it might even be causing problems for her. But Krishna didn't want the earth to suffer this. The example is given, Maharaj and Gopi Purana continue, that for the pleasure of her husband, a beautiful young wife may decorate herself with many golden ornaments. These ornaments constitute a painful burden for the delicate wife, but although she is willing to bear this burden, the loving husband removes the ornaments for the pleasure of his wife. So the Lord, desiring to apply the wisdom of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, took precautions to remove from the earth the burden of the Yadu dynasty. Okay, yeah. And so it's kind of like our little bit of a research on the subject. Whatever we've done on it, of course, other devotees can make some very learned comments. It's many aspects of it, you know, because all this is happening because of the curse of the Brahmanas. And it's happening at Kurukshetra or Dwarka. I guess it's happening at Kurukshetra during the eclipse. Well, in any case, they were decided to play some fun, maybe a little intoxicated, because they would never deal so impudently. And the Shamba would never deal so impudently with the sages like that. You know? And so, but they did it, and they dressed him up as a girl and said, oh, this girl's pregnant, and what will this child be? And then they were angry, you know. So what's the situation? Should they have become angry at them from their side, from the Brahminical side, and cursed them, you know? Or should they have, you know, tolerated or chided them? Now, come on, boys, don't act like that, you know? Or else just played along with the game like that and so on, you know? So there are many other options. And again, maybe what they did was inappropriate, but again, it was Krishna's desire. Just like Sringi, you know, inappropriately cursed Maharaj Pariksit. So it's kind of our observation that there's questions from the side of the Brahmanas. So if we go to slide number 9, actually here's this picture of it's like Narada Muni and different rishis looking very austere and very tall. And the Yadavas looking like young boys, you know, all playing. Yeah. And then, you know, were they dealing properly, the Yadavas dealing properly? Were they also carried away a little bit by their external circumstances, quite understandably? And then Krishna used it. It's starting to happen. Okay, let's use this first problem then to go into a gigantic reaction that I will control and finish the whole thing off right away. Men are like gasoline and women are like fire. A very bad combination, but if you put them into a motor and control them very, very tightly and ignite the vapor, some spark plug there or something, then it can be wonderful. The same way Grihastha Ashram can be fantastic opportunity to serve Krishna. You can't equal it. No? Yeah, but it has to be a very, very combined control. So Krishna is seeing that already these doshena, these faults are occurring. Let me control the whole thing right now and just agitate it and bring it to a conclusion like that. You know? So the same way, who knows what's going to happen with ISKCON. That's our point then. Or let's just talk about some large, popular religious movement empowered by the Supreme Lord. So if you look at the picture here, with the sages standing up in the balcony and the boys teasing them, there's some monkeys down there too. And of course, we identify with the monkeys in all these pastimes. And the monkeys are very, the artists made the monkeys looking quite aghast at this and very much trying to stop this. It's quite amazing, you know. The artists had the monkeys trying to say, oh no, this is not a good idea. You know, monkeys are not caught up in the intoxication and also the burden of administration, prestige, all these kind of things like that and so on. You know? So that's what I would say, that we can see that, you know, some large religious movement which is set up by a very competent acharya, it cannot be destroyed from the outside. You know? As long as in ISKCON we follow four principles strictly and chant 16 nice enthusiastic rounds a day, then there's nothing which will be able to deviate us from full success. Of course, Abraham Lincoln said, many men can tolerate adversity, but if you really want to test a person's character, then give him power. You know? Power, prestige, knowledge. You know? And so the same way, you know, even if we're following principles and chanting our rounds, then we won't be tempted. We may probably be tempted, but we won't succumb to the attraction like that. And everything can go on very nicely. And the general position is actually the brahmanas are not supposed to curse the kshatriyas. Rather, they're supposed to tolerate them. So we're noticing this. Actually, one of the papers delivered in Radhadesh, where I've been, is we went off to India for this book release, which was incredible stress. You know, dealing with the president of India, the prime minister of India, and everything else, and trying to get them to come. And finally, we pulled the whole thing off in the roaring heat of India, and it was about 80% successful, 85, and very good. And the book was very, very well received. So after that, we survived and came back to Spain and in one week we went to Madrid, Barcelona, and Guadalajara, where the rural community is, and saw so many devotees. And found one very, very ancient Chinese classic, which we're taking to South America. Then we went off to the ISKCON Scholars meeting in Radhadesh. Krishna Kshetra was there, Radhika Raman. A lot of ISKCON scholars, all PhD candidates or professors. And that went on for 2 days, 6 hours a day, and very intense academic presentations. And the audio system wasn't so good, so with my diminished hearing, it was stress every day. And it was about ethics and morality and Gaudiya Vaishnavism. It was in honor of Professor O'Connell, who was one of the biggest professors in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he would always defend ISKCON devotees in their position like that. So as I understand, he left his body, and one paper was ready to be published, and it came out and was discussing the aspect of ethics and morality amongst Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And one of the papers, of course, was all about Sahajiya history. And it's very impressive. The devotees were actually quite learned, quite educated in terms of the different branches of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the different influences like that. So people can ask us, have you seriously investigated this intellectually? And you say, yes, we have. We have very good scholars who looked at these things historically in the different branches and so on, and the documentation available. But this section about, Sahajiya, the devotee gave us, and some of you may want to cover your ears, but I'm going to quote to you from some of the direct sources, actually the milder ones, And he was quoting it about regular sexual sadhana. That was part of the whole process of different, you know, acharyas with many followers, you know, branched sahajiya things, and engaging in disgusting sexual activities, you know, in the name of sadhana. So anyway, the whole strength of our whole culture, of course, of any institution, a Vaishnava institution, has to be Vaishnava Brahmanas, like that, at least externally, you know, like we're talking about now. And so, of course, Prabhupada says that the ultimate culmination of Brahminical culture is sannyas, that one completely renounces. Okay. One has to completely renounce his activities and sense gratification, and cultivate real knowledge, not just book knowledge, like that. And so sannyas is supposed to be when it's properly executed like that. And so another paper then was all about the Mayapur as an ideal spiritual community. And it's very nice because these people are looking at it very seriously, not, you know, with some gyan tendency. So if anything, they tend to go from the side of logical accuracy rather than sentimentality. And the point was that Mayapur is not an ideal spiritual community in the full sense of the word. And many people there were struggling this way and that way, and many, many different aspects to it. And his conclusion was, it's a complicated situation, but he did very good research in the situation. And it stimulated a lot of very progressive discussion, you know. And one thing that came up was that maybe ISKCON, as it exists, as a spiritual institution at this point, like the Yadava dynasty and everything, has become very much advanced in the mode of passion. And that we're putting the GBC body and the administrative body as the ultimate authority in the institution, whereas the ultimate authority should be qualified brahmanas. Okay, and they then are supposed to be detached from all money management and doing their work of actual working, you know, to research things properly, understand perspectives, talk to everybody, and then give very good practical advice, you know, to the administrators, like that, and so on. And people were feeling that in Mayapur, that there was like organization, there was some inspiration, but it was by inspiration by people who had too many administrative duties, you know, and it has to be more internal sankirtan going on. So it's kind of our thought from this is that we have to be careful also, because, you know, if we get too much in the mode of passion in our devotional activities, and it's not going to be corrected, Krishna can't correct it, then he may decide, okay, this ISKCON's not working. I've had so many branches before which have developed and they haven't worked out. So again, I have to stop this and maybe make it obvious to any sane person that these people are not my representatives anymore, you know. So very, very serious, you know, instructions by these examples by the Yadavas in this position like that, and becoming intoxicated, you know, under the influences of using very, very harsh words, and then attacking each other mercilessly, and accomplishing Krishna's will. So that's kind of all we have, and already it's kind of getting time here to head towards our airplane program. We have some time left though. So any kind of comments by anybody else then? The learned scholars and brahmanas here? Everybody? Monkeys?
Maharaj, I loved your analogy. I was wondering if that was from you about the as being in hell, I guess, two man and woman, and how dangerous a volatile it is if it comes in contact with one another under an uncontrolled situation, but yet you gave the example of the internal combustion engine, then it becomes very useful and a very wonderful thing. Where did that come from? That was great.
That's my analogy. That's one of the things I'm good at. I'm terrible cook, a coward on the battlefield, but I make good analogies.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Yeah. But I guess it's a fact, though. It's just amazing how little bit of gas. I guess it's a little bit of gasoline, but it's applied very, very frequently. It's a little vapor, but it's going again and again. And, yeah, it's amazing. Wow.
No, that's a great way to explain the value.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Hasashram is.
It's gone the same way too, though, then, because, I mean, it's such a powerful organization. People say that, even like, was it Pancho Devita Swami, Janardhan Das, he was over with Sridhar Maharaj and stuff, and, you know, running their program, and not so inimical to ISKCON. He was welcome to come over to any temple like that. Well, he didn't come much in Mayapur. But then he had his criticisms, how ISKCON had deviated like this and that. But then the Krishna art book or the Prabhupada art book came out. And he was looking at it, the whole thing, and he said, my goodness, he said, you know, ISKCON, maybe they have some problems, but you can't beat them like that. It's such a powerful organization in the world, actually, like that, and so on. It's amazing, you know, and it's becoming, like I said, right now the estimate is 125,000 school-age children in ISKCON who would all go into ISKCON schools if we had them. And so, you know, suddenly we're training up 125,000, you know, preachers, book distributors, you know, devotees like that and so on. So, but if it starts to deviate and then doesn't get taken. For example, I've heard people tell me that now this philosophy is starting to enter into the Brahmacharya ashrams in India. Okay, you have some sexual agitation. Well, there's one very, very nice girl here and there that a lot of the Brahmacharyas go to, or some of the Brahmacharyas go to, and have a little time with her, and she's just like very nice, and only hangs out with ISKCON Brahmacharyas. So basically, this whole thing of, was, I don't know how it's been going, but several devotees tell me this philosophy is there, that, well, why get involved in Grihastha Ashram? Because it'll take so much time away from your service. Just go take care of your passions a couple times in a year or something like this and that, and go on being a devotee, and it'll go away, you know. So these things are starting to come in, and they can become institutionalized, you know, unless we fight them, and how much they grow or everything else like that. So a very powerful organization then can also be spreading powerful deviations.
Vince.
All right.
Yes, sir. I got echo. Go.
Oh, wow. Anyway. Sunil Prabhu.
Yes, Maharaj.
Go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, can you tell me some tips how not to get adversely affected by power and prestige?
Well, actually, Rabindra Swarup is a story, which, you know, matches all of Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said, if we go on like this, you know, developing ISKCON, we'll have entire nations under our influence and all this power and everything else. And Rabindra Swarup said he was very worried because in the past, this whole thing, you know, is this famous phrase attributed to Lord Acton, which says, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. So he was worried, you know. And so he asked Prabhupada, what will keep us from being influenced by all these things? He said, Prabhupada thought for a second and said that. He said, if you chant 16 nice rounds and follow the four principles strictly, you won't be influenced. And then Rabindra Swarup said he was still worried, and he said, well, Prabhupada, is that enough? He said, Prabhupada looked at him very seriously and said, yes. You know, but we have to do that. Am I getting up and chanting are my rounds a priority all by themselves? Or is there something else that sneaks in and makes them a secondary priority? Do I chant while I'm driving? Do I chant, you know, this and that? No, or my rounds my first priority, like that, you know, 16 rounds. You know? And then the four principles, you know, how much am I doing it psychologically? Are we reading literature which deals with, you know, some improper sexual relations or all this kind of stuff, you know? So that's it. You know, strictly chanting good rounds and following four principles.
Thank you, Maharaj. Very helpful.
Ah.
Maharaj, wasn't also the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam part of that, where Lord Brahma, he was concerned about pride, and then Krishna gave those four nutshell verses, and then the number 37 said, if you do that, then pride will never deviate you.
Yeah, if you keep this perspective, right? If you keep this perspective. But then Prabhupada said it had to be a different Brahma or a different day of Brahma. Because he got that benediction, so it couldn't have happened. Yeah. But right before that, it says when Brahma asks it, right? And right after that, he says, if you go ahead with this fixed purpose of mine, which means, you know, if you have the added, like Hanuman was really disturbed because he suddenly realized he was going through Ravana's, you know, harem with all these half-naked women every place, this and that. He said, what am I doing? I'm a brahmachari, you know. But then he said, but, you know, if I didn't come for any other purpose. He said, if you're going to look for a woman, you've got to go where there are women, you know. And so he said, it's the motivation that makes something sinful, not the act, you know. So the whole thing is to keep the motivation. And like you're saying, if Brahma had this attitude that Krishna is the source of everything, is coming from him, and everything is just, all the energy is just a temporary manifestation, and it goes back to him in the end, you know, like you're saying, you know, yeah. But it's kind of dense, is there?
Well, also, it says, how can you work in the kitchen during a fast day? And Prabhupada, he said, if you've made up your mind that you're going to fast, there's no problem working in the kitchen on a fast day. But if you haven't made up your mind, what's that, the samkalpa, dikalpa, that I'm not going, if you haven't decided, then it'd be very hard to work in a kitchen during a fast day.
And then what happens once you made that decision, then working during a fast day allows you to get a higher taste. Because then you start relishing, you know, how it's all going to be for Krishna, and not, I'm going to eat it afterwards, you know, whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, so it becomes actually a higher taste. Yeah. Many times I think, oh, I'm going to die if I chant my rounds. I'm going to do this and that. That's going to happen, you know. But then that this phrase, you know, today is a good day to die, comes to my mind. Yeah, okay, Maya, come on. I have no problem dying today or chanting or following the principles like that. But I think it's also, Utsahan Nishchaya Daryat Tata Karma Pravarsa Nishchayena. And Utsahan Nishchaya Daryat Nishchayena. Being determined, it also goes in deeper and deeper levels. You know, some kind of thing of, well, I'm going to sacrifice my gross body, I'll die for chanting Hare Krishna. But then after that, the more subtle one is to sacrifice your subtle body, right? Your pride, all this kind of stuff. I was in Chanakapana. He says that, because how can the monkeys are trying to make their karma here and convince these Yadavas not to offend the sages, at least as far as they're concerned. And I don't know if the monkeys got off or not. When they saw this happen, the monkeys may have got off before the tidal wave hit Dwarka. Many have survived to tell stories or something like that. Because different people, you know, involved in ISKCON in different roles and different positions like that. But in any case, how can the brahmanas actually, you know, control the society? How do they do it? The Chanakapanda's comment, at least, was that administrators are like snakes, you know, so full of energy and power and stuff, you know, they hardly can control it. Administrators are like snakes, but they can be controlled by good advice. So the brahmanas actually have practical advice. They have strength of character. Then the administrators, they know their position. You know, they know that we need advice. We're caught up in the day-to-day affairs. And we know these people aren't well-wishers. So the real strength is a very subtle strength. It's not like, Prabhu, we can ban you from this temple or we're going to, you know, cut down your facilities, like that and so on. But it's actually just the strength of character and the actual real knowledge, you know, acquired from austerity. And then naturally, if they don't do it, then what happens is that, you know, just give a man enough rope, he hangs himself. Or to quote Chanika Pandit again, three things go to a rapid destruction. Trees in the bank of a river, a king without counselors, and the woman in the house of some man other than her husband. These three go to a rapid destruction. So what happens then is that the brahmanas, with their tolerance, just, okay, they support somebody else, and sure enough, other project just loses its energy, falls apart. And the healthy projects under healthy advice grow like that and stuff. But that requires that the brahmanas be real brahmanas, you know, with real qualifications like that and so on.
Have you found that there's many administrators that would actually take counsel from other people? It seems that that's an unusual phenomenon, you're generally even a little apprehensive about approaching anybody with an idea.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so that's the atmosphere. But the Brahmanas also have their courage too and their tolerance. Kshatriyas go into battle with the possibility of being attacked and physically harmed. So then the Brahmanas have to go into situations where they may get their ideas and stuff, and they may get their little perks and stuff threatened. You know, they may get their little bit of the little comfortable living threatened, like that, and so on. You know.
Because isn't it generally, it says that you're always to be aware of people that are in power, like, was it kings? You don't, like, associate with people. What's the Chanaka Pandit one on that one about avoiding people that can, like a king or a powerful
king,
person?
King, an animal with claws or horns, a politician, or a woman, materialistic one. Any of these can put you to death at a moment's notice. Yeah. Be very cautious with dealing with it. But Prabhupada gives the example. He said that, I guess it's Chanaka Pandit again. Chanaka Pandit says, one should not get too close to or too far away from three things. A king, a brahmana, and a fire. Because if you get too close, you're going to get burned. If you get too far away, you will drive no benefit. So the brahmana has to be expert. You know, like the kshatriyas, they have to be expert in occupying the vaishyas properly, so they're making profit, they're taking care of society economically, distributing grains and stuff like that, and they're motivated at the same time to be controlled by their potency. And of course, in the shudras also. But on the other side, the brahmanas, they have to become expert. You know, in the third chapter, probably, the Bhagavad Gita probably says, now we're coming to professional devotional service. The second chapter was too general, but in the third chapter, Krishna is suggesting how we should do Daivi Varna Ashram. That's the real manifestation. And then the Brahmanas, they know how to introduce. That's why just, for example, at ISKCON Studies Institute, this whole thing came up about what are we doing. And devotees were saying, maybe we should start making some more practical comments. But Shonaka Rishi, who was the founder, he said, no, please don't. He said, you guys should really try and work in this ivory tower atmosphere of getting these things straightened out on a very fundamental, in a very thoughtful level, And then the devotees can actually take those things and apply them in practical circumstances in terms of remarriage in ISKCON, women becoming gurus in ISKCON, so many different things to be taken care of. But it does definitely take a class of people who live in the forest very, very simply, we're not influenced by these things, and they have the time to do that work. And they may not be as good a devotee as the kshatriyas and the managers, but there's somebody who has to be in that position and to be able to give unqualified advice and look at things from a very cool perspective like that.
Yeah. Do you see that happening anywhere?
I see it again. I feel like a monkey. I don't know. And it's kind of like, right now the thing is, it's a complicated situation. But from this education point of view, for example, maybe about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, Shesha, who was Minister of Education, sent a letter to all GBC secretaries, like 37 GBC secretaries, please give me a list of all the educational programs you have in your zone. And only one person answered him. That was Babi Narayan Prabhu, Maharaj Prabhu then. And he said, I don't have any programs, So in many ways, we've met with that same thing. But you can look at it as the fault of the ministry, the fault of the educators, that they just have not been able to inspire the brahmanas, the administrators, in understanding the importance of Gurukula, the importance of Shastric training in the temples and stuff like that and so on. The importance of actually Varna Ashram training in marriage and administration. But definitely there's an effort, the Viradadesh school, the theology degree is closing down because they haven't got enough students, but the administration degree may be able to survive and stuff like that, and then actually train people. You go and you get trained for a certain practical time period, then you know how to organize people, how to motivate them, and how to.
Doesn't it seem like the time is just about right with what I call the Prabhupada boomers that are now?
Yep. Yeah, they're all becoming Vanaprasas, so it's time to turn to this. Pranadas was saying, looking at all this stuff, which we're talking about, all these initiatives that are happening, like we got a book released. We tried to get the Prime Minister of India to release it, but he was busy. Yeah, okay. So finally we got a former justice of the Supreme Court of India, who's now a big vice chancellor, to release it, and all in short-term notice. And other things are happening too, and so looking at it, he's saying it's kind of like this kind of time to draw the dots together, that it seems like there's so many resources, like you're saying, that devotees are getting very mature and they have time now to deal with this. So it looks like maybe we're just about ready. For example, one practical idea that came to my mind, other people are thinking it's also a good idea, others don't, is in Nashville, we can actually start our own teacher training and administrator training college and start doing it by distance education, weekend retreats, whatever. Because I say Nashville because it's for a couple of practical reasons. But somewhere in North America, yeah. No, Radhadesh, we had experience. What worked, what didn't work. So now in North America, we do it, and then we have, like, Nalanda, a chance to actually train people in Daivivarna Ashram Dharma.
So would these people be just coming on their own, or would they be recruited, or somebody that would come around and see, well, maybe you should consider this? Like, there's a recruiting service, like, for baseball or these different sports where they look to see.
I would say all of them. You know, some devotees would come themselves, and then some administrators and temples and stuff would arrange for people to go, and then the institution itself, the brahmanas, should be going out and trying to promote what they have.
When you say come or go, where?
Okay, if we establish, like Radhadesh, our own university, a school in Tennessee, okay, then it's 2 hours by air travel from 70% of the U.S. population. Many other churches actually have their universities there, and so you could even get cooperation from them and show them what we're doing. Okay, then the idea is, for example, maybe some people come for a weekend retreat, a reception on Friday, workshop Saturday, after classes Saturday morning, workshop Saturday afternoon, entertainment Saturday evening, closure on Sunday, go home. And then you have a whole team of people who actually live at the university who then do the distance education. And that way you can have people coming and going without too much burden, and maybe even pushing it for like a week-long program. And then some people could be residential students, you know. And maybe as it expands, it's just like the Catholics have several universities like this. Of course, the Mormons have Brigham Young University, and it's totally geared toward this kind of thing. And so that's kind of a suggestion right now, which seems to be practical. And maybe in Radhadesh, it kind of worked. It was just a matter of just, for example, Radhadesh is too far away from the city. It's an hour and a 15-minute drive just to get to the place and go back. But if you put it closer to the airport and stuff like that, then people could have, you know, lots of very effective, short seminars and those kind of programs like that. And also, Radhadesh has a problem. There's no good internet connection because it was so distant, like that. So I think we kind of learn, but then we can start off with something like that. And then devotees get their degree in theology, get a degree in education with a specialization in theology, at which you could get your job in a lot of places, or else you get it in administration like that and so on.
So we're talking about two different things then. When you're talking about getting a degree and an education to make money, or the ones that are in the retired vanaprastha stage that are just traveling to give the counsel to the administrators because of their experiences that they've already had in the last 40 years.
But they also could go, that's the whole thing, is that with the experience, and you could go ahead and get together with other people do some little bit of formal study, refining stuff. That's the idea of vanaprastha, right? You're out of it now. So you have the experience, but also you have the time to go back and do your, like when the Pachetas, they got trained up by Lord Shiva. They did their austerities as Vihastas. They enjoyed. When they left, they went out and Narada Muni got them tuned back up again. You know?
Well,
so I would suggest,
One thing that I've noticed is that the nature of the entanglement in the household or ashram, there's not like a black and white threshold that one crosses that says, okay, now these new set of rules. It's more like the continuum, and it's not an easy thing. Even when Prabhupada said he had a dream to go take sannyas from his spiritual dream, I said, oh, how horrible. You know, and then he had the dream again, and then he talked to Sridhar. There's so many different situations that this is not an easy situation to get out of. It's you can touch electricity, but once you touch electricity, it holds you. You know, they're doing. No, there's so I you know, the way you're making it sound, would, if there was a the threshold you cross now, this is a new set of rules, but it's very gradual, and the nature of attachment is that you're more or less set in your ways, especially when you're older, you're on a special diet, you need a little bit more time, you can't have anybody telling you what to do because you've got good reasons for what you've already have to do. You just maintain different health issues. And it just seems like it was a little too simplistic to just think that it would happen on its own like that.
No, I agree. This is why, and also, but the thing is, we've been doing it. We've been trying to do it for many years, you know. And, you know, and we have the books. We have the basic principle of vanaprastha is what? Is that husband and wife become celibate. If they haven't been doing that before as a general broad principle, okay, that's it. Then they become celibate. And after that, they start, you know, a husband starts traveling to some festivals and things like that, and they give it to the house. And then we have enough, we see it already, because we have enough sociological perspective on it. It is so natural, on the other hand. For example, older couples, many times the kids are growing up, they have their own houses, you got your pension. So they join these, like, outing clubs, you know, where you go traveling, and they go to natural places, scenic beauty. And they visit their kids and stay for a few weeks and then go around like that and stuff. Or they move to retirement communities, you know. So I would say it's in some ways it's very natural, you know.
But it's starting to take a little shape here with different older devotees getting an RV and traveling to and putting on different programs with the RV. Maybe two or three come together at different places because there's so many devotees now that aren't in temples that are, for one reason or another, sometimes economic, sometimes political, and they're nice devotees, and they've set up nice like farm communities or householder communities with, like that one in Kansas, what's the Indra Nuja? He has, what, 7 or 10? You've been there?
No. I'm looking over at the gate, though, and people are starting to stand in line for my airplanes. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm being called to my death now. during the Bhagavatam class, Marsha just dropped dead. Okay, so thank you all very much, and please pray to me to make it back to pray to me we have favorable breezes to make it back to Nashville today. Thank you so much for your association.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you for those. Hare Krishna.
Ramananda.
Yes.
So how many people in this Sangha are 50 or 60 years old?
I don't know. We'd have to take a survey here. Probably most of us.
The other day I looked at Mangalirti and 80% were in the 70s.
Really? To be continued tomorrow. Read on Nandamari. So we'll see everybody back here tomorrow. Thank you.
Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.